This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. In a game played at 100 miles per hour, Morgan Whittaker picked up where Vincent Péricard left off a mere 17 and a half years ago with a home park hat-trick as Argyle hit Norwich for six. Interspersed with Morgan's spicy finishes were goals for Dan Scar and Finnazaz. Norwich was sunk, but not without a brace from Adam Ida, before Bundu's Liga debut ended with Mustafa putting it on a plate for Kundal to bundle in, to leave the Canaries, if not in the coal mine, then at least in the doghouse, and wishing that they'd been at the home park pub in St Ives instead, though it's not clear that they'd have been able to organise a piss-up there either. As you could probably hear, I'm not Aaron. He's conflicted out of this week's podcast because of his ties to Norwich. Or he's on a train. I'm not sure. I wasn't listening when he told me why he couldn't be here. Anyway, I'm John, and joining me this week are the Darren Huckabee to my Dean Ashton. It's Sam Down.
Good evening.
The John Otsemabore to my Max Aarons. It's Joe Bell.
What a great comparison that is. Evening, Aaron. John, sorry.
Darren. The Youssef Safri to my Todd Cantwell, Dan Ellard.
You've gone for my exact era of like banter championship players as well. Well, happy with that.
A bit harsh on Todd Cantwell. And finally, the Dia Mercy Umbakani to my Ricky Van Wolfswinkel. It's Graham Clark.
Never heard of any of them.
Well, yeah, Norwich fans probably wish they hadn't heard of Ricky Van Wolfswinkel too. Graham, let's start with you. I'm not going to ask everyone to talk through the game because there are quite a few of us on the pod tonight, but if you could kick us off by giving us your thoughts on what we saw yesterday.
Probably the best Argyle home performance in living memory, certainly in all my time supporting the club. I can't remember such a compelling performance against the standard of opposition. Let's remember Norwich were fourth in the table, not too long relegated from the Premiership, several ex-Premiership and Championship players, and we absolutely slaughtered them with a change in style that was unexpected, which worked remarkably well, and we played with a fluency and energy that we did under the 4-3-3 system, but this time with a clinical finishing that gave us the scoreline. In truth, it could have even reached the Newcastle proportions if we'd been a bit more clinical, but I mean, that's a bit harsh. We were fantastic. And there's several players. I just want to highlight one player who didn't score, and that was Ryan Hardy, because I think he played a part in the first five goals, whether making runs off the pass or whatever. And I thought that was a stunning performance from somebody who didn't score.
Now, know what Aaron feels like when people on the podcast answer questions that you've written down in advance. So I promise to Aaron that I'll be a reformed character when I'm back in the guest chair next week. Aaron likes sometimes to get us to talk through the goals individually. I think if we did that tonight, we'd be here until midnight. So, Sam, why don't you take us through the entirety of the Morgan Whittaker hat-trick?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when it was that many goals, actually, I'm struggling to remember exactly how they sort of played out. I think the first one was the I think sort of went down the right hand side, didn't it? And got pulled back, I think, by Azaz to Whittaker, who just sort of slotted it neatly between two defenders. I think we initially weren't really sure if it took a deflection. I definitely remember that, but it, watching it again, I don't think it did take a deflection.
I felt like in real time it didn't look deflected, and then the first time I saw the video of it, I thought it did look deflected, and now I've settled on it not being deflected. Finally,
that's more or less the trajectory I went on with it as well. Yeah, the third one was a counter-attack, and he's just sort of danced through a few players and unleashed from about sort of 20, 22 or so yards and put it in the corner. Maybe if you're a Norwich fan, you're thinking the keeper can do a bit better with it, but it's a wonderful finish by Whittaker. And his third, our fifth, was a lovely raking ball over the top by Azaz, I think it was, yeah. And then it was Hardy who's then on the... No, I'm describing the one he missed. It should have made it 5-0. It was the ball over the top for the actual goal, was the ball over the top by Randall. And then Azaz had sort of crossed it across goal, and he's just sort of arrived in the 6-yard box. And at 6-yard box, it's a kind of poacher's finish. I mean, it seems it's such a good thing that we've scored so many goals that I'm getting my goals muddled up and not sure which one's which is just incredible to say. And who would have possibly thought that we'd score 6 goals in a game? Wow. We didn't even score 6 goals in a game once in our entire 6-year tenure in the Championship last time out. And I think the only time even since that promotion to the Championship we scored 6 in a game was the Newport promotion match when we won 6-1, which is one of the most memorable games of recent times. So, yeah, just absolutely incredible. Great hat-trick by Whittaker. Great finish for all three of them. I think he himself will probably feel a bit annoyed, as Graham kind of alludes to, that he didn't get that one for the one-on-one, but could have before we actually scored the fifth. But, you know, that's you know, I'm sure we can forgive him that one when he's putting such a fantastic performance, and we've won 6-2. Just incredible. And I found myself having to eat my words to a very large extent of what I said after Tuesday's defeat, because I was really starting to fear for us, although also perhaps proven right in some extent, saying we should go to 3 at the back. Just thought I'd get that one in for the listeners, because I know that one of our listeners tweeted us at 2 p.m. saying Sam will be delighted we've gone to 3 at the back, and I was delighted, and I was even more delighted at full time.
Yeah, we'll come on to the system in a little while. I think to clear it up for the goals, as I remember it, the Whittaker hat-trick goal was actually Hardy who showed some great footwork and slid it in down the channel for Azaz, who then crossed for Whittaker. And I think the one that Whittaker missed was Randall with this incredibly composed piece of play, deep lying in midfield, sort of waited to see where the Norwich defender backtracking was going to be before pinging it over to, again, Azaz, I think. Hardy may have been involved in that one too, but certainly Azaz with the decisive pass into Whittaker, who was denied by Angus Gunn.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to ask, do you think Gunn should have done better for Whittaker's second goal? But you sort of mentioned that you think if you're a Norwich fan, you should have done. I think it's not right in the corner from Whittaker, but... And also Gunn's footwork is a little bit weird. It seemed like he was sort of way too far back on his heels, but...
John, you're the host. You're not allowed to have opinions anymore.
Oh, that's true. I'll revert to Aaron blandness from here on in. Dan, with Sam handled the Whittaker hat-trick, why don't you talk us through the other three goals that we witnessed from our goal yesterday?
Yeah, second goal was very pleasing and kind of leads back to a general point. Whilst it was a free kick, and this point is perhaps more about corners, but we played a lot of our corners short yesterday, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do. When you're floating them into the box and consistently not scoring from them, you kind of think, well, we might not even bother bringing the centre backs up. We might as well just get the ball back in play, get our really good dribblers on the ball, and create a chance from there. The second goal was obviously not a corner, but it was a free kick, and we spotted the opportunity of, rather than just swinging it into the box from a reasonable area, we had a little 2-on-1 overload down the side and got into a good position to cross in. I think there was a bit of confusion at the time as to whether it was a Norwich player who hit his own crossbar, but I think on the highlights it does look like it's Gibson, doesn't it, who kind of pokes a leg out and it hits the bar. And then a really composed finish by Scar. I think it was one that centre-backs could have... You could say they might snatch at them. I'm reminded of a chance that Leighton Orient centre-back had in the League Cup game down here, where he kind of the ball came back to him from about 6 yards out and he scooped it against the crossbar. I think Scar showed a lot more composure than that player and just slotted it home. Really nice finish. And number four was just kind of jaw on the floor time, wasn't it? Because right after number three, we were all kind of in dreamland. And then straight away again, just such a clinical bit of play from Azaz. It's the little angle he creates. And I think when you look back on the highlights, it looks like the keeper perhaps could have done better. It's not right in the corner. But I just think Azaz takes it so early, you know, gets into the box, does a few step overs, and then it's that little shift onto his left to create the angle for the shot. It's fantastic. It's too quick for the defenders. It's too quick for the keeper to kind of think, oh, he's about to, you know, he's about to shoot here. And I think he just completely takes him off guard. It was a brilliant bit of play and kind of capped a brilliant performance from him. And number six was, yeah, pure football cliches, pure icing on the cake. A wonderful, wonderful ball in from Bundu. Really promising cameo from him. Appreciate that, you know, Norwich were kind of pushing forward and he had plenty of space on the counter, but still, he looked really sharp in his cameo, which is great. Perfectly weighted ball in, and Kundal, nice and composed, could have hit it first time, but had the kind of composure to take a touch, slot it home, and yeah, 6-2. I mean, who on earth would have seen that coming?
You think, same question as for Sam, that Gunn could have done better with the Azaz one? I mean, for me, it's goal of the game, and in real time, it looks like it's just really zipped past him into the corner. Not much he could do about it. But the angle on the replay, it sort of looks like it... Again, it looks like his positioning is not ideal for it.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's just he hits it early enough that it takes him by surprise. I think if Gunn had expected him to be shooting, and if Azaz hadn't kind of taken it so early after shifting it to his left, I think he perhaps could have or would have been more expected to save it. But I think just because it was a bit of a kind of almost... a pot shot sounds a bit lucky, but you know what I mean, just hitting it earlier than he expected, I think that's why it's gone in, rather than it being a massive keeper error. I don't think that's probably the greatest thing. I don't think Angus Gunn had a particularly bad game. I mean, you know, we could argue a little bit about the Whittaker one and the Azaz one, as we say, but you know, he hasn't done a lot wrong. He's made a good save one-on-one from Whittaker. He's not had a particularly bad game, and we've stuck six past them.
Barry Evans says, I'm looking forward to ref watch. Surely Mumba's needless challenge was outside the box. Not that we are complaining. This was not the only listener comment that we had about this. And so, Joe, I know given that you weren't at the game yesterday, if I'm right in thinking. So I will throw this one to you for an early ref watch start. We really need to get a jingle going for ref watch, don't we? I'll have to get Aaron on that when he comes back.
Yeah, we do. On the whole, I'm largely complimentary of the referee's performance. I think I've watched it twice, actually, the full match replay, just because there were various things that I missed the first time that I'd watched it. Overall, I was pretty pleased with how the referee handled the game. I don't think you noticed him massively compared to previous performances that we've seen from officials. But then you do have, I think there are two massive moments in the game that the officials end up getting wrong. I was on here last week after Preston going on about how their second goal was offside with the lads stood in an offside position. And unfortunately, this week I have to be consistent. And Ryan Hardy comes back from an offside position and deliberately interferes with play in standing in front of Ben Gibson. That is a disappointing aspect, I suppose, from a Norwich point of view, that the first goal, had VAR been in place in the Championship, wouldn't have stood. That doesn't decry from their deplorable performance or take anything away from how clinical and ruthless Argo were. And then, of course, the second incident is, as you've mentioned, the penalty, which is a good yard and a bit outside the penalty area. The initial contact, that's certainly the initial contact, is there's no doubt that Onel Hernandez chooses very wisely when to go to ground, performs a miraculous somersault that I've never seen anyone perform on a football pitch before, when he does end up in the penalty area. The one thing we're not doubting is that it is a foul. It's clumsy, it's reckless, it's needless from Mumba. He's a little bit over enthusiastic to get one over, obviously, one of his former teammates. But I think actually the baffling part of all of this, it's a difficult decision for the referee to make whether or not he thinks it's in or outside the area. It's a very brave decision for him to come up with the fact that he has to be absolutely certain that that's inside the area. So kudos to him if he thought it was, even if it wasn't. But the strange thing for me is there's no yellow card brandished. A, for the challenge from Mumba, and B, for the reaction from Onel Hernandez in goading Bali Mumba. I was a little bit shocked that, but I mean, really, the fairest thing to do would have been to book both players and no one could have complained. Mumba for the tackle and Hernandez for his reaction. So that was a little bit surprising. But on the whole, thought the referee had a pretty decent game. He wasn't helped by his linesman on the first one. And it was a gutsy call for the penalty, which ultimately he might have got wrong. But I'm sure somebody out there will manage to find an angle that proves me wrong.
Yeah, so my understanding, and someone should correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's a bit of a misunderstanding about the rules in this area that a lot of football fans have, which is if a foul, the foul is not given based on the first point of contact. If you start fouling someone outside the area and continue fouling them into the area, that can be a penalty. And so I think for that reason, I think that Mumba incident is a lot less cut and dried than a lot of people seem to, based on a screenshot that shows the first contact is very much outside the box. Yeah, we don't have VAR angles in the Championship, but I've watched it back quite a few times from a number of angles and reckon that the whole foul is actually outside the box. I don't think he actually touches him at all inside, but I do want to just add that level of nuance that it isn't actually just as simple as saying Mumba's, you know, clipped his heels outside the box and therefore it cannot possibly be a penalty. So I think it doesn't quite work like that. Does anyone else want to weigh in on that decision?
Yeah, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. You are right in that, but equally, I don't think there was any contact between the two players in the box. I think the contact ends outside the box and then Hernandez then falls into the box. Yeah, I think that's correct. But if that's what we can moan about, there's not a lot.
Yeah, Sam, Paul Burke says, not Paul Burke. That's a comment for later. Harder than it looks, this hosting gig. Jamie Beale says, surely VAR should be used everywhere or nowhere. The Prem's had it for two seasons now. Shrug emoji. Not saying I'm a big fan of it anyway, but still, that wasn't even close to being a pen. Sam, I know you are a big, big fan of the video assistant referee. Do you think it should be used in the Championship?
No. Well, for one, it has made me a bit of detect from John Sarcasm. I'm not a big fan of VAR at all. I think it causes more questions than it answers. But even if you accept that VAR has a place, I don't think you can really say it can be everywhere or nowhere, because how are you going to get the technology and the infrastructure to have VAR at, you know, some of the poorest League Two clubs? I mean, I think that's not on the card. You know, I can maybe accept the case that any Championship club should be able to have it, but not beyond that. And I think even with regard to Championship clubs, I'm certainly not clamouring for it. I'm really not.
I think you've got to have 36 cameras for VAR. So
yeah,
that's not really for Championship level. We've got goal line technology and I don't think it's ever been used in any of the games in the Championship so far. But
no, exactly.
From the game where the referee had to test whether it went over the line or not at Bristol City. But just on the penalty, I think it comes into the category I've seen them given. If it was us, we would have claimed it. So it was a penalty. It was a rash challenge by Mumba, but like as said, Hernandez had a go, and so did Stacey. So they both had a go at Mumba, which was a bit unsavoury, I think, because he showboated in front of them, in front of the dugout, and they didn't like it. So I think it's a bit retribution going on.
Yeah, you sort of wonder if there's some Norwich City office politics involved in that, but I don't believe that Stacey and Mumba really overlapped at all.
Literally by about a week or two, yeah. In pre-season, that was about it, yeah.
I suspect that was something to do with things that Mumba did during the game, although I have to say, incredibly tin pot behaviour to scream in an opponent's face at all, let alone when you are 5-1 down. Joe, you were frantically waving your hand, wanting to weigh in, and then we will move away from this, ultimately quite irrelevant aspect of what was otherwise a great game.
No, I mean, I think we should all be very grateful that we were 5-1 up at the time this penalty was given and it wasn't 2-1 or something, because then I'd be absolutely incensed and there'd be steam coming out of my ears. Just going back on the point about the listener's comment about VAR, either you have it in the Premier League or you have it in the, or you don't have it at all. You have it in all leagues or you don't have it at all. I think Graham hits the nail on the head when he talks about you've got to have 36 cameras or whatever it is to have VAR running at its maximum potential, even if in the Premier League they still manage to get it wrong with the 36 cameras. But your bigger issue is having it in the champion, if in the Championship, is there just isn't the officials either. There's not the number of qualified people who'd be able to make the decisions. There's just about enough qualified people to run the Premier League's VAR department. So it just comes down to a sheer numbers issue. And to be honest, if there was VAR, we wouldn't be able to have a ref watch segment. And then why would people keep listening after we've talked about the game?
Yeah, I don't think VAR...
Well, we would, Joe, because as you've seen in the Tottenham game today, the VAR can be used and it can still produce a number of really remarkable decisions. But yeah, anyway, it's not happening. Unless we get promoted this season, we won't be seeing VAR anytime soon. So let's hope we get promoted and then we can talk about VAR to our heart's content.
Yeah, and as we all know, if there was VAR in the Championship, it would only buttress some immense, massive anti-Leeds conspiracy. Anyway, before we move on, back on to all the good things about yesterday, Dan, is there any concern at all that we conceded two goals? I mean, conceding twice has been enough to send us to defeat in a number of games this season. We're not going to score six every week. And, you know, it was potentially a little bit reminiscent of some of our other games this season that we let those goals in so quickly one after the other. Do you have any level of concern there?
Short answer, no. Long answer, not really, because when we're still, I know there was a bit of a style change and a formation change obviously yesterday, but in general we are still a very aggressive team in terms of committing bodies forward, wanting to create chances, wanting to score goals, and the inevitability of that is we're gonna leak some at the other end. So no, I'm not concerned on the basis that I think we will be able to outscore teams quite a lot of the time, especially at home. You know, 13 goals in 4 home games, which is just astonishing. The question will be when we go away from home, as we've seen, you know, 1 point from 4 away games, will we be able to do that? So far, you know, it hasn't really worked in the sense of we've scored in 3 of our 4 away games, but obviously, you know, lost all of the ones in which we've scored. So it's difficult. I think that the defensive structure, as it was yesterday, is encouraging. I think Pleguezuelo looks a really good fit at right centre-back in terms of, you know, it's a tricky role. I think you've got to mark zonally quite a lot of the time, know when to push out, know when to tuck in and stay compact with your middle centre-back. It's not an easy role to master. I think he did really, really well there. And Gibson had a good game too. I think Macaulay Gillespie will be keen to get in there. You know, he was excellent last season, and I think he will be able to make the step up and be a good left centre back. But right now, Pleguezuelo, Scar, Gibson is a good back three, and with Houghton and Randall as that double pivot, I mean, they were astonishing yesterday. And generally, the way they've started the season, that's a good double pivot to have in front of those three centre-backs as well. So time will tell. Obviously, we got Mike Cooper to come back as well at some point. You know, I'm still very happy with Connor Hazard, but, you know, that Cooper might help in that department as well. From an entertainment point of view, yeah, it's brilliant. And from a let's try and get to 50 points point of view, I'm still not worried, but let's see how it goes away from home.
I was really frustrated when you go 5-0 up inside 50 minutes. You want to, the one objective then is right, keep a clean sheet, get out of it with a 5-0, 6-0, however many it ends, just end with a clean sheet. And I was really frustrated that we did concede two. But actually, I think for all of Norwich's problems yesterday, and there were a lot of them, I think we also have to give credit for their first goal, because they knocked it about at the back, they flicked a switch, and they went from back essentially from just inside their own half to Ida running through behind our defence in three, four touches of the ball. It was a really, really slick move. It was their best bit of football all afternoon, for my opinion. And I just think on that count, you have to give them a little bit of credit for that and say, hold your hands up and say, look, that was just a really good goal that was scored against us. And as we touched upon, the second goal was just a really rash challenge that leads to a penalty. So in terms of whether or not we should be concerned or not, no, we probably shouldn't, because of the fact they've scored a really good goal and a penalty. There's nothing I don't think we could have done to prevent the first goal, if I'm honest. So it's just one of them things. If it had come off, if it was a ricochet that we'd failed to clear or we hadn't dealt with a set piece, then yes, we could be concerned by it. But I just think we've got to hold our hands up with that one and just move on.
Can I just say, I think he was actually offside when the ball was first played to him.
It's a real touch and go one, I think. I've looked at it a couple of times and I wasn't totally sure as to where his run started. It's difficult for me looking at Argyle TV, except you guys might have had better views in the stadium, but it's a close one, definitely.
I think that's a good place to take a break. And I promise when we come back, we'll be talking about all the good things that we saw yesterday.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
And we're back. Let's read through some listener comments, shall we, that touch on some of the other things that I think we should talk about yesterday's game. Paul Burke, who actually is his turn to have his comment read out this time after I jumped the Angus gun earlier, says, "Wow, what a response from team and manager. Going back to 3/5 at the back did mean we had less control in the opposition half, but we looked more comfortable defensively for most of the game and crucially were clinical with our chances." And Gavin Jones asks, "Does Shuey revert to 4-3-3 in other matches now or stick to 3 at the back? And if we had our shooting boots on against Birmingham and Preston, as we did today, and won those games, do you think he would have reverted back to 3 at the back, even with the drubbing at Bristol?" We've touched on the system a little bit, but obviously it was a big reversion back to the 3-4-3, whatever you want to call it, that we played last year that served us so well in League One, but that we have so far this season put aside for variations on a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. Sam, do you want to take Gavin's pair of questions?
Yeah, well, one of them wasn't Gavin. One of them was Paul Burke. You were taking the credit away from him again.
Paul Burke had more of a comment than a question, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I'm asking you to answer Gavin's question. But if you want to come and sit in this chair, which is a lot harder than it looks, then you're welcome to. One Twitter space does not an Argyle Life host make.
My apologies to Paul Burke, who's probably heard his name far more than he ever intended to listening to this podcast. But to answer Gavin's question... to answer Gavin's question, yes, I was an advocate of going back to it. I think I said after the Bristol game that we had to go back to basics, back to what we were comfortable with to some extent. That doesn't necessarily mean going ultra-defensive, but it does mean going more counter-attacking and at times a bit more direct. I turned to my friend who I was watching the game with yesterday and I said in the first 25 minutes, I think we've seen more sort of long balls into the channels than we probably had in the previous 3 or 4 games combined up to then. And I don't think that was necessarily a bad thing. We were going a little bit more direct. I wouldn't say it was route one, but it was more sort of route two, maybe, rather than the more convoluted routes we were getting there, getting the ball up the pitch before. It wasn't quite such an emphasis on playing out from the back. We had the wide centre-backs into the channels and they were going direct when the option was there. And even when the option wasn't there, it was getting it into the right, ballpark of the pitch and often winning throw-ins or winning corners from it. So I think that was what was needed. I think it was a bit more compact. It was a bit tighter. We didn't allow them so much defensively. I think they had very little in the way of chances in the first half. They had that one pot shot at 0-0 from about 25 yards out that had been tipped away. Well, it's a long shot from range and it was right in the middle of the goal. So you would have been very disappointed if he had done anything other than save that. So I don't think you can count that as a real chance, or probably not even as a half chance, really. So it did the job. It restricted Norwich to next to nothing. And yeah, blimey, how good were we on the counter, as we've alluded to, with some of these goals. That fourth goal in particular is the pick of the lot, not just for the outrageous bit of skill from the absolutely brilliant Finnazaz, and I'm sure we'll come on to discuss his performance in more detail, but not only for the skill from the brilliant Finnazaz, but also the team play in getting the ball out and getting it up the pitch from deep within our own half. So, yeah, I think absolutely vindicated in going back to a back three, and I think it will stay there for the foreseeable future. Look, maybe if we got a back four with the inverted fullbacks, I think maybe the logic, the argument against that would be, if we get that right, it could be absolutely amazing to watch, as we saw hints of in the first six games. But if we don't get it right, it could be really, really horrible to watch. And I think with the formation yesterday, it showed we're just as capable of getting it right and it being amazing to watch, but with a much lower risk of getting it wrong and it being awful to watch. So I'm not saying we should absolutely, and I did maybe, you know, in a bit, I think that, in semi-jest after the game, I said, now we should hopefully never hear the words inverted fullbacks ever again. And that was a bit of a jovial comment, and I don't really entirely stand by it, but I think, yeah, that three at the back is absolutely the way it's going to go for the foreseeable future, and quite rightly so.
Yeah, Pete Gartrell says, or Gartrell, I'm going to borrow Aaron's cluelessness at pronunciation here. All season, we've had the majority of possession in games, but not got the result. Yesterday, .. 31 possession, 3 crying with laughter emojis. And Gossy says, is this us now implementing the same tactics which have beaten us recently? We've gone from dominating possession to sitting back and being clinical on the counter-attack. Graham, do you think that change in formation, which Sam has just discussed, kind of goes hand in hand with that apparent change of tactics, or do you see the two?
I think one of the two areas where we were severely lacking at Bristol City, and to a lesser extent at Preston, was we didn't win second balls and we gave the ball away. Yesterday, we won all the second balls and we didn't give the ball away. And that makes such a difference in the middle of the field. As a result, we're able to move the ball quickly and score the counter-attack goals. I think what's happened is we've now got the so-called plan A and plan B, because I thought Norwich played a high line, which played into our hands to run behind on the counter-attack. But there are going to be teams, particularly coming to home park, that are not going to play that way, which makes the 3-4-2-1 a little bit more difficult to implement. So I don't think we've seen the end of the 4-3-3 and inverted fullbacks. I think it's horses for courses, and I think Shuey hinted at that. He may have made the excuse that was the reason for the change. But I think we can play both systems, and we've got the personnel to play both systems. If we were more clinical with 4-3-3 in the last few games, we wouldn't be talking about a 3-4-2-1.
Yeah, does anyone think that we could have had pretty much the same result yesterday playing the formation that we've played, or some variation on it, for most of the season with the four at the back? Or is anyone willing to make the case that, you know, those changes that Shuey made were kind of an integral part of the result? Because I do think, obviously, sometimes you can overanalyze the system a little bit and underweight basically what Graham said, which is just playing well versus not. Very simply, at Bristol City, we were terrible. And you know, obviously there was really no shape. It wasn't so much that the formation was, in my opinion, lacking, as as anyone who's seen the still image of where our back four were leading up to Bristol City's third goal would attest. There was, you know, we were not playing that formation. We were completely out of shape. Yesterday we just played really well, and I guess it's possible one could argue that, you know, we could have done that with a different formation. Does anyone want to weigh in on where they stand on that?
I think we can play both, and that's to Shuey's credit. And we'll win using both methods and we might lose some, but I think it puts us in a better position. And what Shuey did last season was a lot of in-game tactical changes, and I think this gives us the opportunity to do the same, because after the second goal, effectively, we played with a back five, still scored four more goals. So it was great to watch, great to see how the system changed. And I think defensively, we were more solid, but were Norwich a potent attacking threat? I don't think they were.
I sort of echo everything Graham said, really. I think there was an element of that game yesterday where it was equally not only how good we were, but equally the failings of the opposition. And, you know, horses for courses, and on a different day, the 3-5-2 might have left us completely vulnerable, or 3-4-2-1, however you want to phrase it, would leave us completely vulnerable at the back, and we'd be run over in midfield, etc. I think this occasion the tactical switch worked, and I know Shuey flippantly battered away the praise that he received in the post-match press conference yesterday. You know, he didn't want the praise. He said the praise belonged to the players. But I think, you know, it's down to us essentially to praise Shuey for that change, because it was so bad at Bristol that something had to change. And I actually thought we looked really solid at the back yesterday. I know, as Graham says, Norwich weren't exactly troubling us too much, but they did have little pockets of space they got into, and they had little chances here or there. I know Hazard obviously made the one save in the first half from distance, but there was another one from Ida in the second half before he scored that was low down that he had to react well to. But it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we go to Hull next Saturday and we revert back to the system we've played all season. I just think it'll, you know, Shuey goes on about every week how the tactics and the selection depends on opposition strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's what we will see with this system. Albeit the 3-4-2-1 does seem to lend us a lot more fluidity in making in-game changes, as Graham's just said, than what, to my eyes, the 4-3-3 sort of leaves us a little bit restricted as to what we can change in-game without going, you know, gun all-out change, right, change everything. The 3-4-2-1, you can be a little bit more flexible with it. So I think we'll just have to wait and see week in, week out, even though I am one of the committee members of the 3-4-2-1 fan club.
Martin says, I think you've also got to praise Ryan Hardy as well. He may not have scored, but he ran himself ragged and contributed so much to the win, echoing a point that Graham made earlier in the pod. Martin adds that Rams obviously is an absolute starter for me every week. Joshua Bohe says, proper bounce back against an all right side in Norwich, reverted to the formation that won us 101 points last season. Morgs and Finn standouts, in my opinion. Bundu may well become my favourite Argyle player. And my new best friend, Michael Savage, says, are we now allowed to get excited about Bundu? What a 5 minutes. To take some of those in turn, and I know we've already mentioned a couple of them in passing. Dan, do you want to talk about Adam Randall's performance?
Most definitely, yeah. I've seen a lot of different players getting a lot of praise for yesterday, quite rightly, because, you know, the man of the match vote, I think, the obvious pick is Whittaker, but I think there were a lot of really good kind of 8 or 9 out of 10 performances out there. But for me, my man of the match was Adam Randall. I thought he was immense at recycling possession and then just being really, really smart with it, picking out good counter-attacking balls through to set up attacks if they were on, or playing it more simple if they weren't. Proper midfield control with him and Houghton in there yesterday. In theory, as was mentioned earlier on, you know, dropping from like a 4-3-3 to this 3-4-2-1 potentially means you've got one less person in centre mid. You might lose a bit of midfield control, but Houghton and Randall were utterly dominant in there yesterday. They didn't really give Norwich a sniff, constantly snapping at their heels and pressing every time they, you know, try to play out through centre mid. It was a really just dominant performance from him. And yeah, great to have him back in the team. It was kind of like that form that he showed when he came back in at the end of last season, when he just really kind of galvanised that midfield. You know, Mitete and Butcher and Houghton were doing okay, but then Randall came back in and just really added that extra something to our midfield. And he was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah, and I think we're...
I would echo that. I think it was his best ever game for Argyle. And the number of killer passes he made, to his credit. I mean, I think he's struggled a little bit in the 4-3-3. You've got to be quick. You've got to pass the ball quickly. And he got called on possession once or twice. But yesterday, it was near perfection, a midfield performance, as you will see.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think we you know, maybe getting tired of saying every week how impressive Jordan Houghton has been this season. And I want to give him a shout out as well. I know Dan did mention him in the same breath as Randall there, but another absolutely outstanding performance from him. My personal man of the match yesterday was Finn Azaz. I gave him 9 out of 10 in my ratings. Very, very close to a 10, but I thought he looked a little bit off the boil for the first 10, 15 minutes or so. Misplaced a couple of passes and therefore probably... is not getting, probably not up there with the level of performance that, for instance, Jerome Opoku put in at Accrington away on a Tuesday night. One of the very rare 10 out of 10s I've ever given.
You were desperate to get that in, weren't you?
Yes. However, I, as everyone listening to this podcast will know, I'm an enormous fan of Azaz. He's getting up there, I think, for me to be already one of my favourite ever players that I've seen in an Argyle shirt, if not the favourite, just in terms of the way he plays the game, I think is so beautiful to watch. And Sam, he was absolutely unbelievable yesterday, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He had some involvement in almost all of the goals, actually, didn't he? I think it was only the second, I think, he didn't have any involvement in. I think pretty much all of
second,
the other five...
He put the ball in. He put the ball in for the second.
Right. Which one didn't he have the involvement in then? No, literally all six of them then, because even for the sixth one, it was him who put that raking ball over the top. For the fifth, it was him that laid it out to Hardy, who then crossed for Whittaker.
No, Azaz set up Whittaker for the hat-trick goal for the second time this hour.
Right, yeah, I'm getting confused with the one. So that, for the fourth, he himself scored. For the third, I think it was him that passed it to Whittaker. For the second, he put the ball in. So was it the first that was the one he wasn't involved in? So for five of the six goals and one other very big chance, he had a big involvement in five goals plus one other big chance, which to have that level of involvement in a game for any attacking player at all is absolutely extraordinary. One of the best, I think Graham said it was Randall's best game for us. I wouldn't disagree. I would think it was possibly Azaz's best game for us as well. The other one people would point to is Milton Keynes away last season when we won 4-1 and he had a big part in all four goals. But I just think that the higher level of opposition and the fact that he actually was involved in five goals yesterday was just absolutely fantastic. He, every time he got the ball, he looked like doing something dangerous. The only reason it's on a 10, and this is the only reason, is maybe the first 25, he just took a little bit of time to get going and get into the game. But that's the only reason he's not an outright 10. He was absolutely fantastic after that point. He was flawless after that point. Just an absolutely magnificent performance, not only in terms of the quality and the chances created, just what a pleasure he was to watch. He made football into an art form in that game. And I think, remarkably, I'm still not sure whether or not I would give him man of the match, because despite that, how amazing that was, Morgan Whittaker did literally get a hat-trick, and I think it's very... very hard to justify giving man of the match anything other than to the hat-trick scorer. But any other day, Azaz and Randall would be man of the match, respectively, with the performances they've put in. That I had a little bit of doubts about Finn Azaz towards the January to March time of last season, when we had our, should we say, mini wobble, because it wasn't a real wobble, it was a mini wobble. Azaz had just come back from injury. He wasn't putting in his best performances at all. He seemed a little bit off the pace, whether it was his head wasn't in the right place or whether he was just, his body was struggling coming back from injury. He seemed like he just wasn't quite the advanced that we knew before his injury. But then in the final month of last season, last few games we went on that winning run, he was brilliant there. And he's come back in the Championship after a bit of a prolonged transfer saga, and he's been even better. I think he's been right up there with our very, very best players this season. And I would also like to give a shout out to Ryan Hardy. Despite what a great season he's had, I think genuinely his best game, not necessarily his best game for the club, but his best game for us this season was yesterday. not the games he scored. And I think even though he scored in the other games, he didn't put in such a fantastic all-round performance as what he did yesterday. He was constantly creating as well as just threatening yesterday. He was giving the defenders an absolute nightmare to deal with all afternoon. So, I just want to praise Hardy as well as a dad.
Yeah, I said on this podcast last season that with the possible exception of Barry Bannon, I felt that Finnezaz was the best outfield player in League One on pure technical ability. Now, that's not to say that he always played up to that level. I think there have been question marks over consistency with him. Obviously, you can't discuss that without taking into account that really bad injury that he had. I think it would be a stretch. I'm not Joe and with Lewis Gibson, so I'm not going to say he looks like the best player in the championship or anything like that on technical ability, but I think he is very, very top end on his day. Yesterday, he was just unbelievable against a very, very good championship side, albeit one on an off day. And I think there's a lot more to come from him as he beds into this league. Graham, to return to Michael Savage's question, are we allowed to get excited about Bundu yet?
I think he had two touches, was it? I've never seen two better touches from somebody making their debut. So the turn and pass down the left-hand side and then the ball bent round the defender for Kundal. I mean, they were impressive. You can't deny that. He's obviously got pace. He's got power. I wouldn't say he's an obvious choice for in the centre because I'm not sure he's the sort of back-to-goal type player. But if you imagine him on either flank running powerfully, I was quite excited just by two touches.
Anyone else on the Bundu Express already?
I think one thing Graham touched on is that he's maybe not the best back-to-goal player because without wanting to be anywhere negative after such a great performance, I think the first few times he tried to win the ball aerially, he got beaten a little bit. So I'm not sure he's necessarily the guy to win the ball, bring it down and then hold it up and bring others into play. I don't think that's really his game. But yeah, in terms of being able to yes, run at people, but also, you know, the technical side of it as well, because he made that absolutely fantastic pass to Kundal for the goal. The time he took to... Because so many times we see players get the ball in the area and they panic a bit and they run at goal and they just try and shoot from an angle where a shot isn't really on. The game intelligence for him to see Kundal coming and for him to put that ball across that landed perfectly at his feet was brilliant. And I think he had another good pass, you know, across goal about a minute or two before that to somebody else. So, yeah, I think it's important we know what his skill set is. I think he's not a Niall Ennis who can hold the ball up brilliantly and bring others into play. He's more akin to somebody who can... To maybe even, you know, the advanced and Kundal type of player in terms of creativity. I know it's a very small sample size, but he looked very creative in those moments we saw. And he clearly has that express pace in him as well. So lot of potential there for sure. Very, very early days, so it's not getting too carried away, but you can't be anything other than positive with those two touches.
And finally, before moving on from this segment on individual performances, last but not least, I think we do have to talk just a little bit more. I know we've already been through his goals about Morgan Whittaker. I think we saw yesterday when we were in the pub that Ryan Hardy has the most goal involvements of any player in the championship. And in second place now is Whittaker after scoring his second, third and fourth goals of the season to add to his three assists to this point already. You know, a player who obviously needs no hyping up to our fans, but Joe, just how good is Morgan Whittaker?
I'm glad that I got to talk about Morgan Whittaker because I was only talking about Morgan Whittaker a couple of hours ago with somebody. And I think what is clear about Whittaker is that, and this goes for anyone in any walk of life, in any job, in any position that they might hold, that when you're happy and you're comfortable in something, you are able to perform to your maximum potential, your maximum ability. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, stacking shelves in Tesco's to, you know, cleaning buses on a Sunday night, or you're playing professional football. If you're happy in what you're doing, if you're comfortable in what you're doing, you are able to do your job properly. And the one thing that is abundantly clear now is that Morgan Whittaker is very happy where he is. He is comfortable in everything about his life. You know, he's moved down here. He's settled into the way of life. And he is just really, really enjoying his football. And it is a joy to watch, because when Whittaker is happy and enjoying it, he's not an unplayable. And there are times where he just pops up in pockets of space and he just glides past players. And I thought his three goals yesterday just showcased everything he's about. He had the composure with the first and third goal. He had the peace of mind to place that second strike so perfectly away from Angus Gunn into that corner of the net. I just think his all-round game is a joy to watch. And, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't work out at Swansea City. You know, that happens with players. He had a very good loan spell at Lincoln City the season before he came to us, where clearly he was comfortable and enjoyed himself. But his game is going to a new level. And without wishing to sound flippant and trying to bait people on social media and things, and it's a silly thing to say when you think about the sum of money that it is, £1 million in this day and age in the transfer market looks an absolute steal.
Yeah, Ryan Hardy's worth 10.
Well, apparently so, yeah. But I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? And, you know, long may Whittaker's happiness and enjoyment in the West Country continue, because he could have a hell of a legacy at Argo by the time he's finished.
Absolutely agree with all Joe's just said. I think that's such a great, insightful point about you know, psychology and being happy, allowing you to play in your full potential. Just as a bit of trivia, there can't be many players in the Football League who've scored hat-tricks for and against their current club. And after the game yesterday, Whittaker has now done that. So it's a bit of a nice little statistic to add to his armoury. And the first Argyle player to score a hat-trick in a home league game since Vincent Perricard against Coventry in 2006, which kind of feels crazy. It's been over 17 years since that last happened. Oh, we've obviously had plenty in away games. We've had a few in cup games as well, but just feels a bit crazy. We've gone so long since having one. So a much needed, obviously, but yeah, and a nice way to end that statistic yesterday.
Yeah, and I would like to apologise also when I mentioned the Perricard precedent in the introduction. I did erase, as I'm sure Joe is very concerned to point out, Sam Cosgrove's excellent hat-trick in a very important game that helped us get to Wembley last season. A quick trivia question.
There was also Ruben Reid hat-trick against Lincoln in the FA Cup as well since then.
A very quick trivia question for those who are not Sam, who I know knows the answer. Who scored Argyle's goal the night that Morgan Whittaker scored a hat-trick against us?
Reece Shirley.
Shirley, not... Yeah. Yes, it was Reece Shirley. And Sam, whatever happened to him?
He's in America. Playing somewhere in
Yeah, he is. Somewhere in America. I'm not sure. Like college soccer, as it's known out there. Not sure who for from there, but he is in America, yeah.
Reece Shirley, Reece Shirley. That's enough of that.
He doesn't scan as well as the Billy Sharp one, in my opinion. Not at all. Cut, yeah.
One more sort of serious question before I'm going to move on to finish with a few nice, fuzzy 6-2 witty reader listener tweets. But Andy Cook asks, do the last couple of results indicate a worrying lack of squad depth? Feel like we could be in trouble with a few injuries to key players. And it's quite remarkable that Andy Cook managed to tweet that after scoring a hat-trick himself for Bradford at Newport yesterday. I don't know if Aaron has sent me this one by mistake and that this one came in after the Preston and Bristol City games. If it did come in after yesterday, I guess what it could mean is, you know, does yesterday indicate that when all of our players are fit and firing, we look absolutely class, but there isn't much, you know, to back it up based on Tuesday night? I think it's a question that is worth addressing again. Graham, how do you see that one?
Well, don't forget the two rights weren't in the squad yesterday, so we actually got a squad of 22. Lots of those are interchangeable should there be dips in form or injuries or suspensions. I think given the resources we've had, I think the squad depth is as good as it can be. And they're capable of playing a number of different ways, which is the the flexibility I'm sure that Shuey desired. So I think it's certainly good enough. I mean, funny enough, speaking to some Norwich fans after the game, they didn't think their squad depth was good enough. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, you've got Championship, Premiership players and you've paid millions for them. So I think our squad depth is as good as it can be in the circumstances of the resources that we had. So, yeah, I would say it is.
Yeah, and obviously Norwich yesterday maybe would have been a different proposition if they'd had Ashley Barnes and Josh Sargent fits to play for them up front. Sorry, Sam, I think you were going to jump in. Or was it Joe?
It was me. I was just going to agree with what Graham said and also say that, in my opinion, looking at that game when I watched it back and I saw the team sheet and I wrote it out in front of me, I'm much happier with our squad depth when we play. It might sound stupid, but I'm much happier with our squad depth if we set up 3-4-2-1 than I am if we set up 4-3-3, only because we don't have to worry about having a fit left back when we play three at the back and wing backs. Whereas when we play four at the back, the overwhelming issue I have is that we are short of a left back. Whereas I think we can cover it playing a wing back system like we do with the 3-4-2-1.
I agree with that. What I would add is, without wanting to name any names on this podcast being a happy podcast, but I also feel that under the 4-3-3, there are a couple of players who, shall I say, maybe nicely are not our strongest players in terms of ability, who are only one or two injuries away from having to start under the 4-3-3. Whereas I think with the 3-4-3, it allows us to spread players who can play multiple positions a little bit easier and allow us to field a stronger team while still rotating a bit as well. So I think that's also a benefit of having that.
Yeah, I said on the pod last week after the Preston game that I felt Shuey picked an overly strong side, which can sound like a bit of a perverse thing to say. But what I meant by it was he played sort of the best 11 players you could argue that we actually have at the club, and then you leave yourself with not a huge amount necessarily to bring off the bench. I wasn't on the Twitter space that I'm sure Sam hosted so wonderfully on Wednesday, but my criticism after Bristol City was he went to completely the other extreme, and it was far too weak a lineup, frankly. I think, you know, I said before the game yesterday, I think there's a happy medium to be found between the two, where you start a really competitive side at this level, but you have players who can come on and make a difference. And I felt that we did that yesterday. Kessler Hayden came off the bench, who is otherwise has started, I think, every game or close to it for us. Obviously, you know, we were able to bring on Kundal as well, who scored. Bundu came on for his debut, which is, you know, this is no knock on Ben Wayne, a player I like a lot, but gave us, you know, a different type of option to be able to bring on up front to see out a game. So, yeah, I feel that while the squad depth could be better, as Graham notes about Norwich fans' complaints, only a very few clubs at this level have the resources to have just an unbelievably deep squad of players where you can just rotate in and out and it's the same effect. And I think that we are looking in a pretty good place with that. Certainly after, more so after yesterday than after Tuesday. To end with some nice tweets, given the novelty of scoring so many goals that Sam is massively confused about who did what in relation to all of them. Richard Knoll says, attack, 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 three at the back. Fantastic performance for the lads. Nice to see a League Home Park hat-trick for the first time since Vincent Perricard. Sam can hopefully confirm that, well, he already has. And the question is, when did we last score six at home? I think Sam mentioned already that we beat Newport in the promotion game under Derek Adams. I think, Sam, we were saying yesterday as well, there was a 6-0 win against Tranmere that I remember because it was on my birthday in 2003. And I think you said there was a 6-1 win over Peterborough as well, going back a little
bit. There was, and of course, let's not forget the 7-0 over Chesterfield. That was 6-0 at half-time, and we were actually 5-0 up inside 18 minutes, which I'm sure has probably never happened in the EFL since, or probably for a very long time before. Yeah, 6-1 against Peterborough, that was in the year we came 8th under Paul Sturrock. 6-0 against Tranmere, the year we won the league, and 7-0 against Chesterfield, the year we won the league, and 6-1 against Newport, obviously, the year we got, the very day, in fact, we got promoted under Derek Adams, and the 6-2 yesterday. Those are the only times we scored six since I've been a fan, which is about 22 years now.
Lee Smith asks, have there been two more contrasting games in a row, from the ridiculous to the sublime in 4 days? Graham, in your years supporting the club, can you remember two more contrasting games in a row?
No. Simple answer. But then that was down to the two different teams, wasn't it? So it's difficult to compare. If it had been the same team that had lost and then won in different manners, that would be different. But I think the Bristol game by consensus was, well, apart from the first 8 minutes, which was a shambles, was largely down to the changes in personnel.
Sam would no doubt, Joe would no doubt like to note the huge difference between 4-0 against Bolton and 3-1 at Morecambe.
I mean, let's be honest, that 3-1 at Morecambe game was very far. It was a great win on the day, and it was a great day, but that was very far from our best performance, that 3-1 win at Morecambe. So it was a contrast, but nowhere near as much of a contrast as yesterday.
I'm going to be a massive anorak here and pull this one out from 2005, when we beat Brighton 5-1 at home, and then the following game lost 5-1 at Sunderland. So there we go. Just throw that one in.
Mathematically, that actually does take the cake from this week. Dan has won the car.
Thank you.
Rick Partington says, from an attacking perspective at least, can anyone name a better performance by an Argyle team? It was immense. I think Graham already had an answer to this one earlier on when he said that was, you know, one of, if not the best performance that he can remember. Joe, from an attacking perspective, can you remember a better performance by an Argyle team?
Off the top of my head, no. If I was given time to go back through games, I'd probably be able to find an equally impressive one. But, you know, the point is right. You know, every time we crossed the halfway line, it looked like we would score. And, you know, six was perhaps, in the end, who thought we'd say this? Six was flattering on Norwich, really. Because it, you know, if that had been seven or eight, I don't think they could have complained too much, because they were woeful at the back, massively open, and we executed our plan fantastic, and we were incredibly clinical and ruthless, which is not something that we've been able to say too much. I know we said it in the last home league game against Blackburn that we were ruthless and clinical when we eventually got our foothold in the game. But yeah, I mean, this was just outstanding to watch twice in a day. I watched it, so it was very enjoyable.
Finally, Lewin Reed says, nice to get the goal difference back from Tuesday. And the final word to James Bradder on Facebook, who says, my boy, who's 8 years old, had tears of joy running down his cheeks. It meant the world to him today. Brilliant result. Well done, lads, with 11 green hearts. I think we'll call that a day. But there we go. And it just remains for me to say thank you and goodbye to those who have joined me on the pod this evening.
Good night, Aaron. John, sorry.
Thank you.
See you the next time that we ban Aaron from hosting. Keep it green.
That's the end of another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. Before you go, please make sure you drop us a review on whichever podcast platform you are using, and make sure you follow us on Twitter at Argyle Life. 1886. Cheers.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.